Hey, everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio's first Friday Toast to the Arts and Park show with Nancy and Lisa. Right now, it's just me and Nancy's taking care of dogs. Sometimes that happens here. But the National Parks Arts Foundation, we love them because they are known for putting out these amazing artists in residence program where artists of all kinds of medias and genres, whether it's music or you know, visual art, whether it's ceramics, whether it's dancing, filmmaking, artists can apply to be a resident in a park for a full month. And we were talking about from Hawaii Volcanoes National Park to Chaco Canyon to the Dry Tortugas out in the Florida Keys. So go to nationalparksartsfoundation.org. So today we're excited to welcome traveling composer. He's a nature nomad too. That's it. It's the word. Ben Cosgrove. Yeah, right. Ben Cosgrove, he creates music that really gets into the world of nature, landscape. Sense of place is something huge for us, and that's a big deal with his music too. And you just heard that with his piece, This Machine in the Garden. The Machine in the Garden. It's the opening track to his fourth studio album, which is The Trouble with Wilderness. That's a crazy title. I want to hear about that. So everyone, go to bencosgrove.com. So welcome, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm in Hawaii, so it's hard not to be feeling awesome.
So how do you feel about their studio there in the art house? You're in the art house.
Yeah, it's I didn't know this was part of the deal, but it's been pretty great. I don't think I've ever been on a residency that came with a like fully equipped sound booth in it.
Yeah, so, your sound is good. You should see how I'm recording right now. This is not like booth.
You should see how I usually have to record. It's a lot scrappier than this.
Yeah, isn't that the hard thing about doing sound? I mean, even, you know, with us traveling, and it's always like you go into a place and you're like, can everybody put carpet back? But I really don't want you to.
Yeah, I mean, what you do is you do really need to kind of be gathering good audio all the time. But I have the luxury of being able to kind of work from voice memos for months and years at a time until I go into a studio and then kind of lock everything down.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah.
And it sort of forces things to evolve more than they would if I were just, you know, gathering all the time.
Your music, number one, is I really love it, but you really do like to, well, from my perspective of listening to your music, and also I'm interested in what you do as a writer as well, but it seems that you're kind of showing the two main sides, and then like everybody get it. I don't know how to explain this correctly, but it's like a paradox, and you're getting in the middle of it, and you're like, hello, there's both sides. And it's kind of like nature. It's like us and them, nature and humanity. And it's almost like, even though we're connected, we are very connected to nature. We're part of it. It has become like the line in the sand, and yet it shouldn't be. And I think your music kind of really delves into that part of, like, you know, Machine in the Garden. First, when I heard the title, I was like, oh, damn it. It's like, you know, when you see a big old cannon in the national park system and then you see wildflowers around it and you're like, dude, we did that.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about that.
No, you got right to the heart of it. I'm glad you picked up on that theme and those messages in the music. It's a sort of a direction I tried to move in very intentionally with that last album. My work before then had always been about landscape, a lot of it about parks, especially. And I sort of found that by accident, I've been writing all this music that was about really like a specific type of landscape, which is like namely these like explicitly natural areas that were kind of cut off from what we think of as, you know, human influence, right? Like oceans and wilderness areas and national parks and these sort of like kind of like glorified, fetishized views of what nature is and where we can find it that don't actually align with how I think we should be thinking about nature, which is like the title of the album, which you were asking about, is The Trouble with Wilderness. And it's taken from an essay by that same name by an environmental historian named William Cronin, who wrote it in the mid-90s, in which he kind of addresses this. And he talks about like wilderness is an important concept, but it's not a sustainable method of conservation to just imagine that the way we should treat nature is by walling ourselves off from it. Like any mode of dealing with the natural world has to allow for the existence of human beings. So it's all about kind of remembering that the tree in your backyard is every bit as wild and interesting and worthy of wonder as one in the middle of, you know, Yosemite National Park.
Do you feel like you're the connector? Like, you know, it's like a co-creative experience when you listen to nature. Where do you think we got music from? I mean, it's no matter what, that's the direct source, right? Other than our heartbeat, you know, and our own human vocal sounds. You think about, like, even the Native Americans say the woodpecker is the first one. So when you start playing flute, the woodpecker flute is the first one. It's like the first sound you start to mimic and work towards. So when you go into nature, I mean, you do hear all these sounds. And to me, it's pretty mind-blowing because you can get a vibe of what is going on in the woods kind of thing, depending on where you are. But let's just say the woods, right? You know,
sure.
You can tell if a snake is going near the baby nest because not only are the birds going to chirp, but like it's a cacophony of everybody going crazy, right? But then if it's a nice early morning, everybody's like, hello, good morning, how are you? And it goes around the room, all kind of, well, the outdoor room, right? And you can tell by those sounds. And somehow they make a song, like different species are communicating. And when you look at like the plants, like I see like a flower could be opening, it's really pretty, but when it's bending from the stem, like that's a cello.
Yeah. Going,
like a, so have, it's, have that's what I think of, about your music.
Oh, thank you. Have you heard of the, writer Bernie Krause? He's got he's what you're describing is totally up his alley. He's got several books, one of which is called The Great Animal Orchestra. He's got a bunch of theories about how kind of the soundscape sort of self-manages and divides into all these acoustic niches. But he also reminded me of he died only recently, but there was this Canadian composer named R. Murray Schafer who had dedicated most of his career to like environmental music. And he wrote this very influential book in might have even been the 60s, a while ago, called The Soundscape, which talks a lot about what you're saying. And a whole middle section of the book is devoted to it's sort of the most fun set of chapters, but he like notes all these moments in like Western classical music where you can tell that composers were being like unconsciously influenced by the sounds they were hearing. Like you can trace like certain patterns in keyboard music from the, you know,
so 1700s consciousness to, like, are connecting in a different way.
If you go through the world like hearing like cobblestones, you're like your brain will like kind of move in that direction. You're like, it's a sound that's familiar to you, and you'll unconsciously want to replicate it.
You going by the scenery? What's happening, like the, you know, the human connection? Because I don't know about you. I know you've done a lot of residencies in parks and national forests. And I mean, you've done worked with NASA. I mean, it's like insane. I'm like, you're in the insane category of, and I mean that in a good way.
I'm insane in all the ways.
I'm reading everything going, holy crap. Like if I have to introduce this guy, like I'm going to be talking for half an hour and we're still not going to get you on the show. I mean,
you can go with wandering piano player. That's what
I like. Wandering piano player is good. Yeah. Right. But when you're looking at the landscape, are you seeing things encroaching? Because even from our national parks and some of our public lands, depending on where you are, and they're the height of protection. I mean, I was in a wildlife refuge. We were in Texas somewhere, and I'm filming pelicans, and in the background of the pelicans are all oil derricks going. So you're hearing birds and this oil derrick sound, and your smell, sense of smell, is going from wildlife, like, you know, you can smell the water to like oil. So are you experiencing that? Because that's kind of the other feeling I got when I was listening, is like you have that feeling of here's this beauty, but then what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah. I mean, I feel conflicted about it because certainly I experienced that. I think at first I would, you know, the analogy I would use would be like, you know, when you're like taking a photo for like Instagram or whatever, and you try to like crop out a telephone pole. So it seems
what I'm always doing. And now I'm going like, we need to show the telephone pole.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think it's more, it's not just depressing. It's sort of interesting to consider, interesting and important to kind of consider an environment holistically. Like it's good in a way that we can't give ourselves the illusion that when you're in, I forget where you said you were, but like Everglades,
Texas,
like, like you, if you were able to ignore or forget about all these oil derricks, it would be kind of an, like, I don't know, it would be counter to any kind of eventual progress, you know?
Yeah, that's the hard thing. And now I'm like, I think your music really kind of made my mind change around a lot. And because it's been something I've been battling with, and then listening to the music, I'm like, okay, you know, you've got to, there's a way to do this. And it's like, I have a whole file of photos of trash. And part of the reason we started our tour was we watched a young kid on the Hinga Trail in the Everglades drop a soda can. Here we are on the Hinga Trail. It's like one of the, especially in the winter, anyone, it's, you know, it's accessible to everyone. Like if you're in a wheelchair or your mom pushing a pram or something, it's accessible.
Yeah. Which is hard to come by in the Everglades.
Right. Yeah. And it's, there's gators. I mean, right there, Hingas. I mean, the bitterns. And I mean, I'll go on and on. I love it. It's beautiful. But we're standing there and here's all these alligators. And this kid drops the soda can right there. The parents didn't say a word. Nancy and I had to hold each other back from
like, from murdering like, this kid.
what the hell? Well, the parents, actually. Yeah. The kid isn't being taught. And so then I've got the photo of this can, and you just see this embankment full of gators and the soda can. Now, are the park rangers going to go get in there? Like, what happens when a baby snake gets in there? You know, what, you know, maybe gets trapped. What happens to this floating can? And we're like, we are not connected to nature anymore. And maybe it is true. The more we keep putting nature this side and cities and what we're doing, we should just show the coexistence and going, okay, maybe we don't want this much over here so we can actually fully see it, because we have, I mean, it's sad.
Yeah.
Now I think I should publish that stuff. I should publish it.
Yeah, I think so too. It goes a different way too, where I think a thing that can happen when people have an idea that there are these sort of pristine expanses of land somewhere that like aren't being, you know, polluted or otherwise affected, it gives a sort of moral licensing to mistreat the places that aren't those, you know what I mean? Like, it's okay to like put another parking lot here because like, you know, there's trees over there. It's like, there's exactly. Alaska. So what do we care about?
Oh, you know, it's like, only it's, one it's, bird's, yeah. It's a little butterfly. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. And it's, I don't know. I feel like these in-between places, like these community parks that you said you're doing a lot more work in, tend to be almost at least as interesting as some of the like high profile national parks. And
well, now you are in a high profile one. Now you're in the
literally
art house and overlooking the ocean, but so you're not like sleeping in the park, but this is a park that is high profile, but I think is really, we've done so many interviews with artists over the years with Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and there's so many elements to it. And I think what's, and I've never been there, but I think what's neat from everything I've heard is like, you really do have the indigenous connection. And, you know, the indigenous people, and then it's really, it's always changing because of the lava, the volcanoes. So for you, what was it that you said, okay, I'm going to go for the high profile part? What was it about Hawaii?
It's kind of the second thing you said, especially the, I have a long-term interest in landscapes that change underneath you, that they're kind of like undependable or kind of morphing and to which people have to kind of adapt. So I wrote an album, my album before The Trouble with Wilderness is one called Salt that came out in 2017, I think.
Pre-COVID album.
during a more naive time.
Yeah, happy but, times.
it was actually written during a very unhappy time. But my way of dealing, I went through like a bad breakup, and my way of processing it, because the feeling I had was like, I couldn't depend on the ground underneath me. So I decided I would write a whole album about places where that was literally true, where like salt marshes, which are like above water for half the day and underwater for the other half.
Mono Lake and places like that.
Yeah. Mono Lake. Wow. You know, Mono Lake. That's a really cool.
Pink Floyd album, man. It's cool.
That's it. My a good friend of mine worked there as her first job right after college.
No way. It's cool.
Lived in Levining and the
whole thing. Oh my God. Have you been to the Salton Sea?
Mm-hmm.
That's some Salton weird sea, stuff right now.
Salton Sea is, I think, the place in America that I am most afraid of. It's the first place I ever went and was like, this is, there's something evil here.
I took a photo of a pink flamingo. Someone put a pink flamingo on, where were we? Nipton? Like, I don't know. But
a live pink flamingo.
And this was, and then I got, it sucks because I got hacked. And so I had to start my Instagram and everything all over again. It was bad. And we've had all the security experts on radio shows telling us what to do. And did I listen? No, but apparently not. But I took a photo of this plastic pink flamingo and put it up on Instagram and everybody thought it was a real flamingo.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm like, did it escape from the living desert zoo in Palm Springs?
It's probably like the closest thing to a living organism that can survive in the Salton Sea.
It's really interesting about salt.
Sidebar, do you know where the pink flamingo was invented? It's from Leominster, Massachusetts. It's not where you would expect.
Now the pink flamingo thing has been traveling with us in a very weird way. Madison, Wisconsin, college town. Their mascot, I love Madison. Pink flamingos. What? And yes.
No,
and
they're the Badgers, aren't they?
Maybe not a mascot, but it started. Oh God, don't let me. The Belushi brothers were involved in this whole thing where, I'm going to screw up, but I took photos of flamingos all over Madison in snow.
Oh,
and they did
this rings
thing.
A bell. Yeah.
They put flamingos on the lawn of the university. And they ended up doing this as a fundraiser for a big toga party. And the Belushi brothers either called in, I think Steve Martin was, like, this crazy thing happened. And so anybody, just type in Madison, Wisconsin, pink flamingos, and check out the story. It is the coolest thing. So anyway, and now everywhere we go, it's beyond Florida, man. But I did not know it came from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
So we learn things all the time on the show.
Came from
this
like inland, like non-coastal Massachusetts. It's the guy's name was Featherstone. He was this like eccentric guy.
No way, Featherstone? That's even funnier.
Yeah. My mother lives in the adjacent town.
I've been lucky to see pink flamingos in Lake Naivasha in Kenya. Now that.
Whoa, that is interesting.
Really cool thing.
Now are we talking real pink flamingos? Or
real,
is it plastic?
Like the ones with the bendy back leg. They bend backwards, you know? So it's pretty cool. But I think that's interesting about, you know, changing ground. I mean, we're like, anytime there's a swamp that we can go to, we will go there because to me, it is fascinating and it does shift. And I think about swamps now, especially with climate change and drought and how our wetlands around the country are just getting annihilated. They're drying out. And so there's issues there. But I mean, going from salt to now lava, what's it like?
It's really, really interesting. I mean, I've been really obsessed, especially during my time here. I spent a lot of this residency sort of on the perimeters of the park, chasing down, because obviously there was this big, well, not obviously, in 2018, there was a whole new eruption and all these new flows really like completely reshaped the park. And a lot of the Pune district, which is kind of northeast of it. And I've been kind of hunting down instances where infrastructure has had to be reshaped or realigned to accommodate this new sort of just like carpet of rock that now covers like neighborhoods and beaches and bays that like wasn't there before. So you'll be driving down some like two-lane road and all of a sudden there'll be like, you know, an orange sign and then a wall of lava.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's just, and I've been kind of like interviewing people informally and like reading a bit about because this is obviously nothing new. Like this is just what it is to live on a volcanic island. And I think there's something very instructive and fascinating about understanding how people can live for, you know, like hundreds and thousands of years, with the understanding that the land they're on can go away or be fundamentally reshaped at any moment.
Move. Yeah. It is fascinating. I mean, it's like when you live in Florida with hurricanes, that, you know, that can come and take you out, but you go back because there's a, you know, connection. And that's, you know, part of, like, you are very much sense of place, which I think is so important when something's moving too, like what's going on there. It's, I mean, it could change tomorrow.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I'm generally pretty obsessed with movement too. That's a theme through all my work. For sure.
Do you think it's kind of like temporary art? You know,
yeah.
I mean, we've seen a lot of temporary public art. Like we were, was in New Mexico, Santa Fe, in the Rail Yard Park. They started this public art program, but they said it needs to be temporary. And I'm like, dude, that's just like, it goes against me. I'm like, no, you've got to save the art. They're like, no, but they had a polar bear representing climate change, this big sculpture of a polar bear. Mm-hmm. And then the polar bear went away. And that was the whole point of the moving art, which I thought, wow, okay, that's cool.
So, oh man, who's that artist that did the Ragnar? There's an Icelandic artist who does a lot of kind of like big spectacle pieces, and one of his projects was dragging these gigantic, like person or like bigger than a person cubes of ice, and arranging like 12 of them in a, you know, like city public square, and then they would just slowly melt.
Just to like, oh, here you go.
Yeah, over the course of like days or weeks.
Yeah. So people would get that visual. It's like people didn't understand COVID because they couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think it's
a lot of them still don't. But,
no, I know, but it's still pretty. Like, I know people don't think it's pretty, but I think it's kind of cool. It looks
The ball with the little spikes and stuff? Yeah, yeah, it's adorable.
It's pretty. Unless you get sick, it's pretty cool looking. It's like, you know, it's a disease on acid. Look at it. It's pretty cool to look at. I'm like, that looks neat. But yeah, not unless you're, you know, breathing it in, I suppose that's not cool. Not at all. Cause you know, people did die, but,
But,
so that's
no, cool. I do hear what you're saying. And it is helpful to know, like, oh yeah, I don't want those spikes in my, you know,
like, in your lungs. It's kind of like a little sci-fi thing, right? Yeah. Mm.
Oh no, so, totally. It looks like a, you know, video game villain or something.
it's like little bubbles. Are you going to do more music from this? Because I know as artists get in, they apply for the residency. And then, you know, it's like, here, this is what I propose I wanted to do. And then
partway through, it's like proposal.
detour. And so are you sticking to what you thought you were going to do? Are you going to take a detour? So tell us about what you...
It's sort of hard to say now. But what I did come here with the intention of looking at kind of what I talked about already, was just like understanding a little better what it is like to be in a place where everything is kind of volatile and can shift underneath you at any moment. But I didn't expect to be so interested in the I think when I originally proposed this, it was before I had done the Trouble with Wilderness project, and so now I'm really more of a built environment infrastructure nerd than I was before. I have been more fascinated by like roads that have collapsed into a crater and like how the park has had to reshape its infrastructure to accommodate like the parts of the park that are dangerous now that weren't as dangerous before. And I don't know exactly how that'll fold into the music I make, but that's been a lot of what I've been kind of journaling about I'm trying to wrap my head around.
That's kind of like, you know, when you go in after a wildfire into a park and see how roads melt. Mm-hmm. From a wildfire, and now it's getting, you know, quick. Like right now, as we're recording, the Mariposa Grove in Yosemite's on fire, and it's surrounding it. And they're saying that some of the upper limbs are like flying up so high and so fast that they're going over the tankers coming in with the water. Like, imagine that. Here you go with the water to save the day, and like, here's these fire bolts coming at you. You know, tree limbs. That's
some of these
crazy
wildfires are just absolutely not literally like the water evaporates before it can get to them, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's freaky, and I think it's the lava part. I mean, because it's like you can't stop the lava, And
no,
like wildfires, we have wildfire fighters, which are really, I mean, they're, you know, bless them, because like it's a little crazy now, and we're understaffed, if you will, on firefighters. And I think they're burnt, like literally burned out, like tired, and having to fight things at heat that is so extreme beyond what we all expected. So it's a little crazy. But with the lava, I think people know, but you can't really stop it. So it's like, once it's coming, it's like,
just get out of the way. All you can do is adapt. Yeah. I know. It was actually, I had a very, like, you couldn't write this sort of thing kind of experience on one of my first days here, when I'd been at the park and had gone to kind of look at there's a lava lake currently at the bottom of the main crater at Kilauea there. That at night you can kind of see glowing red and spluttering. Cool. And
That's cool.
Doomish.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I mean, kind of going to our theme of what we were talking about like these like parks are not cut off from the rest of the world the way we sometimes think they are. I got back here and there had been a brush fire about a mile away from this house during the day.
No.
Yeah, that had like completely taken out completely incinerated. I think no homes are damaged or anything, but like fields and a bunch of little forest area completely gone. And there were all these trucks that were kind of like, you know, like putting out the embers and things. But it was just really like, oh right, like this is everywhere is kind of volatile at all times.
I mean, it is, and I think it's just getting hotter. And then when it gets cold, it gets like, you know, like when we were in Madison, Wisconsin, it wasn't supposed to have the huge snowstorms that we got when we got them. And you know, well, for the locals that wasn't huge. For a girl from Africa, I'm like, dude, and it's like, no, I didn't know anything about snow shovel. That's a whole other world.
Yeah, I've got to what?
And no, I mean, I'm fine with it. It was cool. I just had toddies before I did it. Then it was, I was the happiest snow shoveler on the planet, you know. But you can't stop the snow. You can't stop some of these things, and you just like you're saying, adaption. So maybe is that more of the direction is adaption.
I mean,
it's kind of like both sides, because birds are adapting to us where they
live. I don't know. It's like, you definitely don't want to, I mean, you don't want to not try to avert the worst effects of climate change, but also I think inevitably at this point, we've missed so many opportunities that there's going to be some level of adaptation that will have to happen. Like as you're saying, like all the fires, and I'm from the Northeast where, like you in Wisconsin, there's just like crazy blizzards all winter long in a way that there weren't, you know, 50 years ago.
Wow. We were in an area in Texas, and I was talking to a guy, he was painting a house, and, you know, he was just saying he's from that area, born and raised. And he said, we're used to having like at least 2 to 3 tornadoes by this time and blah, blah, blah. No tornadoes happening. And so now he's pissed.
Oh, that's weird.
Because he doesn't have the tornadoes, which I'm going, look, that could be kind of good.
Count your blessings, buddy.
He says, but then because of that, like they don't have the water they used to have. They don't have, like, there's a whole other bunch of side effects of not having your tornadoes, which I would think, well, a tornado is a tornado. No, because it's about the weather.
Or it's like a symptom of the weather that they need rather than the cause. Yeah.
It's part of the nature of where they were, you know, and it's in the panhandle. So it was really kind of interesting. Oh. You know, old timer guy just sitting
that is a very tornado-y area.
And he goes, but we haven't had them, you know, but then they moved to like Missouri. And I mean, I drove through like the end of a tornado in Mississippi and got things stuck under the car. And I'm like, dude, that's a creepy feeling.
It's because terrifying.
A tornado is the same thing. You can't stop the tornado. You can't stop the hurricane. You can't stop the lava.
Yeah.
And that's a very weird thing.
I've done a bunch of work in Kansas recently. And I experienced my first like emergency tornado warning right after a show I had played. And I was helping the staff, like one staff member had stuck around to take everything down. And I was kind of helping him out. And then like the weather was getting kind of weirder and weirder and weirder. And there was this kind of like strange glow. And all of a sudden, like this crazy hail began. And our phones went off with this alert, said like, you have to go to a basement now.
You must go down.
Yeah. And it didn't hit us, but it went few miles south and knocked out a bunch of buildings and like
That's like wildly close, right?
And you're very like there, you can't hide. It's like you're in a big flat landscape like that. There's nowhere to. You feel very exposed and very.
You could be
vulnerable.
That cow that goes up in the wind in that movie.
Like, yeah, yeah, right. You're the like the lady riding her bike.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you're this. It's the flying nun. No, I mean it's not funny because people die, but like we've been in some places too. It's like here's what you do when the tornado comes, and it's not if, it's when. And you know we've been through hurricanes and wildfires, and both of them. And it's there is a weird beauty to it because it's
totally.
It's like with out in the ocean, like the ocean is so powerful, and I think that's an interesting thing too. Where you are is you've got the ocean and the lava, two yeah. incredibly strong forces, right? So that's that. I wonder how that works.
Well, yeah, they're kind of always fighting with stalemate, right? Like, the yeah. ocean cools the lava, but then the lava winds up making an island. So it's
yeah,
you know, win-win, wow. lose-lose.
So are you going to write stories or are you working on an album or are you just kind of putting it all together or
kind of putting it all together? I'm definitely going to you mentioned my NASA project that I did that right before I came down here. I was working with them also on volcano related stuff. We were in Lava Beds National Monument and they had sent a bunch of geoscientists, and you know, like geologists and geophysicists, et cetera, to like study lava tubes. Cool. And in this like crazy, crazy volcanic land. Have you been to that park yet? It's
no, but actually we've interviewed the superintendent retired. A really cool guy. Yeah. And one of our travel writers have done articles on it, but to me, it's almost like a catacomb, like that.
Yeah, thing. A lot of them.
So it's like it's music chambers.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that was, I think, part of the reason that they thought a musician would be a good a guy to bring along. But yeah, it really got me thinking about, I forget what your original question was here.
Well, but we were talking about the thing about lava and then whole thing about the, like, creating an island. Because that's a weird area, too. We were just on the other side. So we did Crater Lake just a few weeks ago. And that is weird. Like it's
really weird.
It's like a giant caldera, right? So when I was looking at it, I was going, well, this looks like Hawaii to me, but not at all because we got snow and pine trees and, you know,
right.
But the geology and it was incredibly powerful. Like, you know, when you go in places like that, like you could die, like nature could take you out. And I kind of like that. I don't want to die,
yeah.
but you know
there's
what
something,
I mean?
Yeah, there's something powerful about feeling that or like accepting that vulnerability. I agree.
Mm-hmm. So there where you were studying the lava tubes, so that's different because you don't have the ocean, but you've got all these weird things going on underneath.
Well, I think what I was, I remember now where I was going with that, which is I think the thing that I was really struck by was that it compares very interestingly to this place where like there these lava flows are, I mean, geologically not very old, but like in terms of a human person, a very, very long time ago. And you've kind of been like sitting there in what seemed like this permanent shape for, you know, thousands of years.
So they're preserved and nothing's moved it and changed it like,
well, I'm just the difference being that these lava flows are like 4 years old instead of that. But I was struck by like, all of this was created by like, and being there with geologists who could like sort of viscerally describe all of this in terms of motion and action and reaction and like describing these landscapes like a stream of rock, which is really effectively, I guess, what it was. Sorry for bumping the microphone there. It's really neat being able to think of what seems like a static landscape in terms of motion and impermanence. Because even though one of the groups there was studying the cracks in these caves and the ways in which they've kind of collapsed and broken down in the time since their formation, which was a neat way of kind of, for me, a neat reminder that like even after they harden, these things don't stop moving. They're still going to kind of change and reshape, and no landscape is permanent.
With nothing's permanent. That's ones. Nature tells us that. That's her biggest lesson, you mm-hmm. know? And I think it's the hardest lesson for human beings to learn, is that change is the only constant thing.
Yeah, I know. I wonder why that's so scary to us. But yeah, I know. I like writing music about that.
I think because you travel too. So change has kind of become our, as full-time travelers, right? You become, that is your comfort zone. Whereas yeah, for it really others, is. It's like, you know, cozy house. And I always think like, do we ever really want to do that again? And it's like, God, how annoying. I don't think I could. I don't think
It's very funny, but yeah. My last, sorry to cut you off. You just reminded me, my last like creative act before COVID hit I published an essay called A Space Filled with Moving, which is like all about how sort of like I'd accepted that like constant motion was it was very hubristic in retrospect, because I was like, I was going to move around all the time. It's the only way. And then like lockdown happened. Boom. And I was sort of like locked in a, apartment for a year.
Oh my God, that would drive me bonkers.
I wish I'd had the foresight to do what you guys did.
Yeah, you know, the first place we got stuck in, I shouldn't say stuck, at a friend's, she has a B&B place right outside Joshua Tree National Park. And so Josh, talk about like, you know, moving stuff, right?
You're sure
that was crazy. And the park closed, and I was bummed because I was filming tent caterpillars, which I know freak people out, but they have these mandibles as they're chewing out of their web that is just crazy cool. Like,
yeah.
This is like, imagine just chewing your way out. Like, it's sci-fi, right? It's just like,
it really is. It does sound like a scene from Alien.
it does. And so we're like, where's Sigourney Weaver? You know, so we're doing this. And then we wanted to go back to the park and go and film, like, are they, you know, becoming, we didn't know what they were, you know. And then we got turned around. But once we stayed out there for 2 months, and as soon as borders started, and that was a hard time because places kept closing. You weren't allowed in the state, you know, you weren't allowed in this park. But Mono Lake was actually one of the first things. And when I was out there, just those, what are they called again? The big thingies? I was out there going, this is some crazy, it's like Joshua Tree with water. Yeah, the salt.
Wow, that's, you know? You're absolutely right. That's I never would have put that together. But yeah.
It is like that, you know, and one time, it's just as, that is a very weird, cool place, but I walked on the boardwalk. And I have a thing about, I almost did a whole story just on boardwalks across the country, because.
Ooh, I'd read that.
Boardwalks, yeah, no, because like I've been there with gators coming out, like the Okefenokee Swamp and stuff. And your boardwalk is never really safe. Okay, so. There's this thing of our typical park brain people going in, oh, we could stand on the edge of the Grand Canyon and not fall in.
Yeah.
Well, go on, take that Instagram photo and we'll place a bet. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not being mean, but like there are some things, but the boardwalks, I mean, this recently we were in South Carolina and the guy was there fixing the boardwalk. And I'm like, are you going to do that one plank? And then I'm going, well, if that plank is there, what's next? You know? And
yeah,
but it's, there's something about being on a boardwalk over these marshes and then the swamps, which really are kind of like, dude, I've had.
Yeah.
I've,
were you I at Congaree? Is that where you were?
I haven't done that. Oh, yet.
Really, really cool. Oh yeah.
Dying to go there. Oh, it's real close. Okefenokee is in Georgia. And I've wanted to go there since a little girl living in Africa, wanting to go to the States for this park. Mm-hmm. And we get there and gator comes right under the boardwalk. And then I'm like, oh, he's really cute. And then we went up to this watchtower, looked down, and then we saw all these gators, and one just chomped down on a turtle. Like, just, you could hear it snapping and crashing, and filmed it. It was
yikes.
Cool. Then coming back, there's another gator just sunning himself. It's actually two different occasions, but there were gators on the way in. And then I'm like, dude, where are the snakes? I got to find my snake. And swear to God, there it was, like a snake. And I'm looking, he's looking like right where my food is. And I'm looking at it, going, what are you? Because I'm trying to go through all these things that you know from travels. I'm like, you're a rattlesnake. No, you're not a rattlesnake. No, it was a cottonmouth.
Yeah, that's a no-win situation.
but he's there, but they know. It's kind of a weird. Yeah, I love what you're doing. I love that you're really showcasing the impermanence, because that's really where we're at. And I think that's why humans are so freaky right now and having a hard time, because they really cannot deal with impermanence and change, and it's constant change. And yet that is the law of nature. you're going to always go back and forth, negative, positive, in between. You know, you can't be happy 100%. You can't be, you know, negative 100%. I suppose if you wanted to, but don't come near me, you know. And if you're 100% happy all the time, don't come near me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, don't worry.
No, no chirpiness allowed. No.
It's funny, though. Like what you're saying, that's also a reason that I feel like the medium I work in is kind of well suited for this as well. Like music is different from visual art in some ways, in that, like, I mean, there are recordings and things, but like fundamentally, it's also an impermanent art form, right? Like every instantiation of a song I write is going to be kind of different from, it'll never be exactly the same way twice. It'll sound different. It'll be in a different room. It'll be, you know, like different people will be there. Mm-hmm. And like once it's over, it's gone. So I like working in I feel like working in a temporal medium like this is, makes it a fun one in which to kind of work through these ideas.
Wow. So now this interview airs the first Friday, like we do every first Friday, is a NPAF, National Parks Arts Foundation show. Where are you going to be?
Where
do you go from here? Do you get to hang out in Hawaii for a while? Or?
Yeah. I'm here for a bit longer. When I go back, I think I have gigs right away.
Cool.
In the Northeast. So I'm playing on the island of Nantucket, a very different sort of island. And at the end of July with a band made up of some good friends of mine. And then I think, so what is the first Friday in August? Is that the
fifth?
Oh, I'm playing in Boston that night.
See, wow. This is like complete from one thing to the other. But that's cool.
Yeah, I hope so. Cool, I enjoy it. I like being kind of disoriented all the time.
And then you get to perform and then go, hey, I'm going to go in solitude. It's a balance, right? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know, think change is balance. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like also, I mean, maybe you found this too, because I mean, we obviously like think about similar stuff, but I have found that because I'm writing about the landscape, it forces me to be very attentive to where I'm at. So even though all performing musicians have to kind of like sprint around the country all the time in order to be, you know, solvent. but I think that burns a lot of people out because it can be, you lose track of where you are, you get disoriented. It all kind of becomes a blur. But I think by forcing myself to pay close attention to each place I'm at, it's really made it, not just sustainable, but like a really, really fruitful, like creative project in the long term.
I hope you go to Dry Tortugas. You should apply for that one.
Yeah, I've never been. It's a hard one to get to.
I know, but I mean, I guess it's so off is the this. Grid. Yeah. It would be so cool, like to be off the grid.
I have friends who did that residency. I think they're from Australia. There's this.
Oh yeah, I think they were on our show.
Oh no, kidding, Anna and Peter.
Yeah, Anna was, but Peter couldn't make it. We did a reunion show with just about as many wonderful. Of them as we could. Yeah.
I love those guys. Their
art is amazing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. She's so cool. But they're such an interesting pair because he's a biologist.
Yeah.
And she makes all this environmental art, and
she does cool. She's got some. I love watching what she does, and I love following all the artists because it's. And then when we go to a park, and we did Chaco, after all these interviews on Chaco, and I was like looking with my eyes, you know, and my observance, but like all the artists and their words, like from interviews, were going through my head, and like all their artwork, I could see their art where, you know, so it was like a whole different experience to go.
Yeah. No, that is cool. You got to kind of like fill your head with interpretations first.
Yeah. So it was like a different form of rock art, if you know what I mean?
And so
this whole other experience. And so it's really cool to do that. So hopefully we'll get to Hawaii soon, so at least we can meet Tanya after all these years.
Yeah, come on down. God, I still haven't met Tanya, so, and I'm here.
Oh my God, yeah. I know. Everybody's got to meet Tanya at some point.
Yeah, she's very elusive. She's.
I know, the elusive, elusive Tanya. She's awesome. Her and Nancy have the same birth date, so it's always like,
oh, no kidding.
Watch out, the universe is going to just do something crazy.
Yeah, terrifying.
But, it's good. It's good. They're both awesome. But thank you, everyone. We're going to close with the song from the album. Again, the album is The Trouble with Wilderness, And we're going to close with This Rush of Beauty and the Sense of Order. Again, keep up with Ben at bencosgrove.com and also the National Parks Arts Foundation. Go to nationalparksartsfoundation.org. Apply to the residencies. They're unique. They're awesome. And also, they are always open to donations, I'm just saying. And of course, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thank you so much, Ben. This has been a true pleasure.
Oh, it's wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for having me.